From the land of Grand Theodore City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's USDA Report Day, January 12th. Today we'll talk about those reports as they were released from the United States Department of Agriculture at 11 o'clock this morning. Some big surprises, especially as it relates to corn and yield for this past year. We'll take that up with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, along with Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day, too. And we'll talk about the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt from Archer Financial Services, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are some of the numbers as they finished in Chicago. Corn futures were up 25 cents, limit higher at 517 and a quarter in the March. December at 457 and a half, up 16 and three quarters as USDA dropped the carryout for the year to 1.552 billion bushels with an average cash price now of $4.20 a bushel. That on a drop in the yield down to 172 bushels to the acre. The soybean numbers from USDA also changed down to 140 million bushels for the carryout from some 170, a cash price of $11.15 a bushel. The nearby March contract there finished at $14.18 and a quarter, up 45 and three quarters of a cent today. And November beans at $11.76 and a half finished 21 and a half cents higher for the afternoon. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago. Wow, what a day it was after 11 o'clock. Actually, before 11 o'clock, because...
Yeah, let's start at 10:57.
Yeah, because there was, and this is not explained very well, but those who follow Twitter and those who are watching, like you, in the marketplace... probably saw a flash drop in the soybeans of about 30 cents just before the reports were released. It was really a market clearing event, I guess.
Yeah, we took, we had a customer that bought a bean with less than 2 minutes to go, put a 10 cent stop on it, and was stopped out before the report happened and would have been back in and running like the dickens. But yes, there was a chunk that came in, did that, really give you an idea in past that they maybe had an idea of what the report was going to be, but they were sure wrong on their sell-off dropping that 30 cents today.
Indeed. And so the market then reacted to what USDA had to say, in particular about corn, because they dropped yield dramatically down, what, 3.8 bushels to the acre, I believe.
Yeah, and if you look where the drop in the, which states it was the I states in Minnesota that took it, 6 bushels, in Iowa, and I think 10 bushels in Minnesota. So that does seem, it's realistic that we did, it's hard to drop that many bushels per acre, but we did it in the I states in Minnesota. So your top 4 or 5 producing states there, right? Just got jammed into that, and that was what caused it. And Indiana, we thought we had an awful good crop over here, but I guess that's not what we're looking at. But anyhow, that helped the corn market, locked up the limit, the synthetics, 3 to 5 cents higher, depending on which month you're looking at, is how their options were trading. So a little bit of oomph will probably happen tonight when we reopen. But the beans, of course, didn't go limit, but they did go 50 cents, Todd, and that's a big move in beans.
Well, it was a big move in beans, but when you think about beans needing to be 2.5 bushel, 2.3 times the price of corn, not quite. It was only about 2, so they didn't have quite the oomph that the corn clearly did, and corn locked up the limit by the end of the day, of course, and throughout most of the trading day in the nearby months. What do farmers do looking forward at this? Because it really sets the tone until we get to what, the grain stocks and acreage report at the end of March now.
Yeah, I mean, basically, this is some... the weather is very, very, very important. We didn't drop Brazil's yield on this report, and a lot of the guys were thinking it should be dropped, and a lot of them are sort of sitting. And we've never really seen the USDA drop this one in January for just weather in Brazil until they get a few more reports of what the yields are down there, and with everything that way. So, along the way, it looks like it's a very bullish. It's going to be a very volatile market, but we could you know, just sit back and see what happens for a little bit here. We could set back a little bit, but I think there's going to be good buying on setbacks.
Yeah, so just on the Brazil numbers, USDA's counterpart, CONAB in Brazil, will release its fourth harvest production set of numbers tomorrow morning. So we'll get a comparison. USDA not changing the numbers for Brazil. We'll see whether Brazil changes the numbers for itself tomorrow morning. So we'll watch for those to come out, too. Producers active today with you? Were they thinking about what the market
has done? Lot of calls, a lot of people wanting to do some things, but a little bit scared, I think, they'd like. Some people did take profits today, you know, on the high end of things, and it's good that they did that, and they're looking for a little setback to buy back in. You know, when you look at the beans, they dropped that to 140 from 175, and that's getting down to pretty close to stocks or pipeline is what we used to call it, I guess. And that does make that one a bigger number. And that's why there's a little more volatility in the beans. And I think that's why we're going to see a little more oomph in the beans. The corn, they did drop the ethanol usage. Ethanol is the big question mark. Over $5, these ethanol plants aren't making much money, if any. And, you know, we think that that number could shift down a little bit again if the price of corn keeps raising.
Yeah, 100 million bushels, so now at 49.50 instead of 5.05 billion bushels, 4.95 billion bushels used for ethanol. So we'll be keeping a watch on that. And it wasn't the only thing that actually, feed and residual was down, what, 50? Actually, there was a pretty good drop in exports as well. So demand, USDA backed off, but I suppose when you lower production, you expect there to be at some point some kind of rationing taking place. Clearly not happening yet, though, I wouldn't think.
Well, I think that some of it, China says they're going to continue to buy corn from us and whatever, but we got to remember South America planted more acres of corn, and they look for a larger harvest than last year. They will turn to there when they can. And we've seen more wheat go into the feeding ration in China, too. So that's going to draw down a little bit on some corn exports as to what they might have been penciling in ahead of time. So that's one of the things that way. And, you know, you do have to remember that also this week the showers are falling across South America. Now, next week in the, 8 to 15-day forecast, it looks drier for down there. But for right now, they are getting a little water.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Scott Irwin is now here, agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. Scott, thanks for being with us to discuss this morning's USDA report. What a game changer it was, particularly for corn. Can you tell me about your assessment?
Yeah, for corn, two things happened in corn that made this really an extremely bullish day in the corn market. The corn market's locked up the daily allowable limit right now of 25 cents per bushel. So the first was on the supply side, and the USDA dropped the U.S. average corn yield by 3.8 bushels per acre down to 172 bushels an acre. And various ways to think about that, we were right at, I don't remember the exact number, but 167 bushels last year, you know, in 2019, and think how terrible that crop year was. And we're, you know, only five bushels above that. So I think that's really shocking to a lot of people. Big reductions in yield in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska also dropped 4 bushels an acre. So they were very large. And based on the information I've seen flowing on Twitter, that 3.8 bushel drop was the largest of the last 25 years plus. Going from November to January. So it was a big change. So that was the supply side bullish factor. And then on the demand side, the bullish factor was the grain stocks estimate, based on my calculations, indicated that usage ended up being 341 million bushels higher than the market expected. So you put those two things together and you've got a very bullish set of data points. Now, the USDA offset some of that in their balance sheet WASDE estimates by dropping feed and residual use by 50 million bushels and by dropping corn exports, I believe, 100 million bushels. The one thing I find fascinating is, you have an implied usage surprise that's huge, and yet you drop feed and residual use for the current marketing year, which that's kind of a head scratcher. So I think the market's clearly trading a lower ending stocks figure for corn than the USDA's official 1.552. I mean, it wouldn't go up 25 cents. You wouldn't be locked up the limit if the market, if the ending stocks number the market believes is what the USDA printed today.
Do you think it's what, 1.4, 1.35?
I guess it's probably something closer to 1.4.
So what are farmers to do?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I was talking about this on Twitter with people last week, that it's an even better pricing opportunity than it was last week. And I know it's very hard to think about pulling the trigger on sales. You know, if you sold last week, then this week you feel like, oh my gosh, I missed another 25 cents on corn and 50 cents on beans. But these are, I still think that these are great marketing opportunities, and that farmers should, you know, begin to, you know, consider making modest pre-harvest sales, anywhere from, I think, 10% to maybe as much as a third. And, you know, you're just not going to want to miss these pricing opportunities that we're going to be seeing. The good news is, the really good news is, all of these price increases, especially this report, means we're going to have the highest probably crop insurance revenue guarantees that we've seen since maybe 2013. And so we're going to have a very high floor under these crop insurance guarantees.
Yeah, so the past several years, it's been roughly $4. It's traded, been close to that. But this one's going to be well above that.
It's, yeah, I think now like with this data, I mean, it seems to me that I'll put 25 cents. It's probably trading, I haven't checked it, 460, 465 today for DEES 21. So, you know, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that we're going to have, you know, 450 on corn and probably pushing $12 on beans.
So the secondary question, because we haven't talked about soybeans very much, they have rallied in concert with the corn for the day. Any reason for them to do anything other than to just go along with corn for the ride?
No, there wasn't really much fundamental information. You know, the soybean stock number was slightly bearish, but USDA did lower the soybean yield for the U.S. by half a bushel. You know, it's not a huge amount. I think it added up to 40-something million bushels, total drop in production. But, you know, when you're starting at 190, you're in the highly nonlinear part of the pricing curve relative to stocks, and those small differences can have a very exaggerated price impact when you're at such historically low stocks. So that's part of, I think, the explanation for the soybean move. But the other part is that the soybean market, the way I think about it, can't afford to lose any acres to corn. And so because the soybean stocks are so, so tight, we have to rebuild stocks. In order to do that, the soybean market is going to have to provide incentives all the way through planting to make sure we get, I think the market needs to assure that we have probably at least 7 million more acres planted in soybeans this spring. And of course, the data we just got on corn and corn being locked up the limit 25 cents doesn't help.
Thank you so much. Glad you're keeping watch on it. We'll talk with you again soon.
Always fun. Thanks, Todd. You have a great day.
You too. That is Scott Irwin. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's turn our attention now to what's happening in the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, I've been hearing rumblings for a while now that the mid part of January into the end of January could really change across the United States. Do you think that'll be the case?
It is certainly looking that way. There's a lot of large-scale features we're watching which will drive the weather on a hemispheric scale. And when you see these pieces of the puzzle falling together, especially this time of year, your confidence is usually a little bit higher. You may be hearing on the news about a polar vortex, a stratospheric warming event taking place. And what we're going to see, and it's going to start later this week and over the weekend, is we're going to start to see colder, not tremendously cold, but colder, more wintry weather hitting parts of the northern plain states and parts of the Great Lakes with a pretty robust storm. Looks like the eastern Dakotas, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and parts of Iowa, and even northern Illinois, by late this weekend into this weekend, we'll be looking at some winter weather. That means snow.
Well, how much?
Well, right now, the heaviest snow is likely going to be in those northern areas. Wisconsin, in particular, and the Arrowhead of Minnesota is an area where, you know, initially we're looking at maybe 6 to 12 inches of snow in some areas, maybe a little bit more than that. This is the first northern plain storm system we've seen in weeks that looks like it's showing a classic formation of a winter storm.
Where is it pouring in from, and does that mean cold weather, really cold weather, is coming behind it or not?
Initially, the real cold weather will not. A lot of the bitter cold air is over on the other side of the globe. You know, they have been over the last couple of weeks, they've had record cold in China, parts of Siberia. I mean, it hasn't been just cold over there. It's been record cold. Some of that cold air is going to start to migrate over onto this side of the globe, but it's going to take about a week and a half before it gets there. So by the middle to the end of next week, and we're looking around the time frame of the 22nd, 23rd, that's when we think much colder Arctic air will start to invade parts of the northern U.S.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services out of Chicago area now joins us to talk about the marketplace, in particular what's been happening in the agricultural energies. Hey, Stephen, thank you for being with us. Why don't you give me your lay of the land as it relates to energies and agriculture?
Well, Todd, and to the listening audience, I want to give some full disclosure here. I have to admit that since the summer, I've really underestimated the power of this market's ability to rally. A stronger than expected recovery in Asia, and particularly China and India, along with discipline by OPEC, has been some real features of this market. As we come into 2021, a few questions do come into mind when assessing the market's ability to rally. OPEC this past week announced that they would postpone a planned upward production adjustment during the first quarter, and instead Saudi Arabia came to the fore and announced a million barrel voluntary production cut. The action put Saudi Arabia once again as the swing producer for OPEC and a key variable out there in terms of how well they managed to cut their production. This unilateral action by Saudi Arabia was an attempt to try to galvanize support within OPEC. And it's interesting to note, and I did see this today, that compliance levels in December were only 75% after being from 100 to 130% during the summer months. You've started to see producers respond to the higher prices. I think right at this point, you need to concentrate on the demand side. That's been tied to the vaccine rollout and availability. Everyone's been very positive with respect to that, but I'm not all that sure how quickly that actually happens. The impact will certainly be watched in the report by OPEC tomorrow. You can go to their website at OPEC.org to see it, but they do come out with a monthly report with some pretty good numbers on the supply and demand side, which I think the market will have to consider. The other factor, I think, is China. They're experiencing lockdowns again. There's certainly going to be questions over that. I think the news flow has overlooked it to some degree. So overall, I think this market is kind of at a key juncture. I think there's going to be a lot of questions over OPEC's ability to manage it. And a lot of these countries are certainly in dire financial straits that they will want to ramp up their own production. For farmers ready to plant, I guess we do need to quickly look at diesel prices. They've advanced faster than crude here over the past couple months. One needs to assess certainly what that price looks like relative to their production revenue of the crop produced. Right now, it's probably quite favorable in terms of being able to buy diesel and sell your crops, new crops, probably some of the best levels we've seen in quite some time. So that is certainly a key consideration for hedgers as we move forward.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us, and we'll talk with you again in a month.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Stephen Platt. He's with Archer Financial Services. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.